Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel and Tripper and Comic Central. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Chris Casso.
Hi.
Gazentai. And, as always, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hey, I just realized that for the first time in years, I'm sitting across from Chris and not at the head of the table.
You made this decision.
Are you stepping down as dad of the family?
I think it's probably time.
Mom and dad are having trouble.
Actually, Chris, I think you should be at the papa position at the head of the table.
Don't age me yet.
My birthday was just a couple days ago. Leave it alone.
I've been such a jackass about always sitting at the head of the table and, like, you know, surveying the domain and
I thought it's just because you wanted to make eye contact with everyone.
Yeah.
Well, I can do it just fine from here, except, I got to crank my old neck.
At one point it was because we were taping all the episodes, but
that's right.
Habit,
no more
just,
video.
You know.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm just acknowledging this little moment of change that's happening for me.
Well, speaking of change,
you're welcome for that.
A lot of change happening in the comics books world this week. Holy crap, is there so much. But first, let's just briefly mention that the Green Lantern 80th Anniversary 100-page Super Spectacular, that's how it's described, is coming out soon.
Yeah.
How many more 80th anniversaries are we going to have to deal with?
So this will be the fifth, and then there's two more.
Yeah, Catwoman, Robin, and Joker.
So we've had Detective, Action, Wonder Woman,
yep.
Robin will be before Green Lantern,
yeah.
And then it's Green Lantern, so it will be the fifth, and then it's Catwoman and Joker,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll probably roll one out for Teen Titans, because why not?
Yeah, so that's seven.
They haven't said anything about Teen Titans, I'm just guessing.
I've never picked up one of these. What are to be found in these 80th anniversary edition things?
So it's an anthology that's supposed to, like, usually bring back different creators that, made an impact. And then most of the stories are worthless or nice, but don't mean anything. The Wonder Woman was supposed to have some meaning in the last chapter because it was supposed to be part of the DC 5G relaunch. Yeah, we'll get there later on. We don't know if that's relevant anymore. And I think Detective launched the next story arc for the main Detective titles. Mm-hmm. So there's a launch point in each of these for something coming up. And then it's also an excuse to make 10 covers with different artists so that you can gouge the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's Green Lantern's time to gouge us.
Right.
How have the previous 80th anniversary specials sold?
Well, Detective Comics was the bestseller of the year for us. And a single issue best-selling book of the year. And I think that was the industry top seller. Wonder Woman, nobody really cared over here.
Nobody cared over it.
Yeah. Action did okay. That was the first one. Then it was Detective. Wonder Woman, like, she did all right. But, like, I reduced my numbers, and I could have reduced them more. And then nobody's really pre-ordered much for Robin, but Catwoman will be the one everybody does, but not on the merit of the interior.
Yeah, they have all the people that you would want on a Catwoman cover doing the covers.
Yeah. Yeah, all the sexy artists.
Pretty much, and,
gotcha.
Yeah, so that one is going to be the expensive one for us to order. But they do a little thing. It's just that it's a risk for us, and we got to try our best to figure it out ahead of time. That's why I'm, like, desperately trying to get people to pre-order. But they still haven't shown us the covers for the ones that we already had to order.
Yeah.
So these are $10 books, and there's 10 covers, one for each decade of representation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, here's a cover by Jim Lee. And it's just like, that will probably sell, but can you show it to me?
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's just off name alone, and they're like, we'll get you hopefully by FOC and your final order cutoff.
Which is 3 weeks before arrival. And you're like,
It's cutting it close.
Yeah. So
I don't know what to do with those, especially after Wonder Woman. I was like, that was felt like a flop. I'd need to actually look at the numbers on it, but it just felt like it did almost nothing except for Jenny Frisian.
Yes.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Well, if you're into Green Lantern, check that out. Otherwise, buckle in, kids. Coming up on Free Comic Book Day, I'm going to try to lay this out as best I understand it. And then everybody, all my friends here can clean up.
It's
my
team effort. We'll get it done.
All right. So. 2011, New 52 hits DC Comics. 20 2014, 2016, Rebirth hits DC Comics, kind of undoing everything the New 52 did. Coming up on Free
Comics.
Sort of.
Not everything, but yeah. Like some things.
Yeah. An attempt to course correct.
Yes.
Indeed. Yeah. And it's only been less than 10 years since the New 52. Coming up on May 27th, coming up on Free Comic Book Day, whenever that is, DC is going to have Generation Zero Gods Among Us, a first one shot of a 5-part series, Generation 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. People are calling it 5G, which is, as I understand it, another DC reboot. Now,
yes,
this was announced, I don't know, a couple weeks ago or whatever, maybe longer. I've only known about it a couple weeks ago. A big, like, Jim Lee and Dan Didio have made this thing
a map.
A new map of where they're taking DC. Mm-hmm. Well, as you're listening to this, about a week ago, Time Warner and AT&T kicked Dan Didio out of the building, fired him.
We're still learning that. I haven't heard confirmation of fire or just agreeable separation.
Right. They told him to resign.
But somebody left.
Yeah. So, we're probably still going to learn new details about this. So, Dan Didio is out as co-publisher of DC. Jim Lee is now the solo publisher of
you
DC.
You saw that awesome headline, right?
He wakes up four days later, four-day nap
to find out he's publisher of DC Comics.
And so now,
hysterical.
5G was sort of Dan Didio's thing, so it might be in trouble. But I also hear that rumors are that if Time Warner is unhappy with 5Gs and they're going to, like, cancel DC Comics.
Yeah.
Let's start at the beginning. Dan Didio fired, maybe
whatever.
Told to resign, maybe parted ways amicably.
But
gone.
This is have there not been rumors of this sort of thing, or have there not been implosions where the press said he was on his way out the door on numerous occasions?
I've personally heard out of his mouth that New 52 really shook the stability or the security of his job. Like, he was on the precipice of being kicked out of the company.
Lasted 9 years.
And then he lasted after that.
Then when the Batawang hit, that made it put a bad black mark on his thing with the Time Warner people. So he was already kind of on thin ice for a bit there, it seemed, you know. May I say something quite briefly here? So, I compartmentalize a lot, so this is how I viewed all this. It is unfortunate that the man lost his job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put that into a box, wrap it in the chain, and throw it into the Mariana's Trench.
Go, baby, go.
We've been wanting him gone for a long time.
Really?
And so there's a lot of people who are saying, like, oh, you know, this is, say what you will, he had a lot of passion. It's like, sure, he did. That's fine. Whatever. And a lot of people are like, you can't blame one man for an entire company as doing, you know, making mistakes.
Line one, I believe Jim Dan Didio is on the phone.
They want to disagree with us. But it's just like, okay, but sure, it takes a village to screw a universe, but but the village, the head village of the village is still the one that let that happen.
Right.
So, no.
If you're steering the ship.
Yeah. You know.
And
Jim Lee's not steering the ship because he's essentially Garfield. He's just in the offices asleep half the
time.
He's
just like, when can I make another Scooby-Doo comic?
Yeah. Right. You know. So, and this is the thing that was new to me was Geoff Johns. I never quite understood how out he was, but apparently they, like, kicked him all the way out. Mm. Like, his name's there, but he has, like, no power. And so that makes a lot of sense for some of the background stuff. And then I also didn't know that Didio and Scott Snyder, were on the outs, kind of.
Yeah, I heard that, too, out of all this whole thing.
So now in my fan fiction, because when Dark Metal happened, I thought it was the weirdest thing because it didn't read like Snyder. It read like Johns. I get the feeling that it was Snyder specifically taking all of Geoff Johns' love characters and being like, don't worry, Jeff, I'll protect them for you. Because it's been written that Didio hated specific characters and was gunning for them, which is so weird in a corporate setting.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Any of that mentality at all?
No, I don't know. Because he said he wanted Wally dead and Dick Grayson dead because they age Batman and Flash.
I read that, which I just... So And that's hard for you fans like you and I, because we love history, we love legacy, we love the depth of a mythological field in our comics. That's why we stay. Mm-hmm. And that's why I left DC, was this asinine process of repeating these reboots that accomplished nothing turned into a gimmick. I mean, yeah, of course, it's all a gimmick, but Crisis was... at the time, innovative and challenging. And for me, back then, when I was in my late teens, early 20s, that did bring me in, mm-hmm. because it did help consolidate this universe into a package that I could get my head around. And I loved being in on the ground floor of so many of those books, because I read them all. Mm-hmm. I mean, Justice League, which I'd never touched before. Wonder Woman, I'd never touched before. Batman, I'd never touched before. I only read Teen Titans, mm-hmm. you know, but I was buying 12 DC books, and I stuck with those books for decades as a result of that, mm-hmm. until we hit the first reboot.
Right.
And then after the next one, I was like, And I didn't realize that 5G was going to be yet another one.
Yeah.
And this oscillation effect. I mean, you guys as retailers, what does this do to your readership? What does
it confuses do to your, people? I still have people coming in thinking they need to try New 52 out sometimes, because they're like, "Isn't that supposed to make things easier?" I'm like, "You're late," and it didn't. So I can at least look backwards and say you could skip this right now.
Well, and I was a fairly novice superhero reader when I started here, pretty much, and. I was like, I'll try New 52, and it did not feel new reader friendly.
No.
And it had a bunch of editorial mistakes, and it just seemed sloppy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So whatever they were saying was a
lie.
And then to keep going back to that well of ideas, I still don't understand how Doomsday Clock was supposed to fit into any of this garbage.
Yeah, and here's the trick, too. Now we don't know how it was intended to, because it was written by Jeff Johns, who's apparently on the outs. So who knows if editorial changed it, if Dan Didio said, like, change that, you know? So
that is particularly distressing to me because of how they not only dishonored the source material by doing this asinine book. I'm saying asinine a lot tonight.
I'll allow it.
Okay, thank
you. Just work your way to Acetem. That was not a good joke. Yeah, but thank you.
No, it was good, because my brain went to, and now we're talking Acetem 12. You know, this book, you know, Doomsday Clock was supposed to reshape how all of these units, it was a cash grab.
Yep.
And then you kind of go, but then it isn't all of it. And that's too bad.
Yeah.
It's all a cash grab.
I mean, it technically did two things sort of, but messily. And it got Legion and JSA sort of back, even though that was already happening.
Okay.
So it's just like, okay, moving on.
Right.
The messy bit, so this will go back to talking a little bit about what Sum of 5G is about, is that one of the takeaways from Doomsday Clock and some of the Wally West stuff they're doing is that there's the character of Metron from the New Gods, who has the Mobius chair, which is like the chair of God, what tells you everything about the universe. And the last person who sat on it was, this is a deep dive, sorry, Owlman, the evil Batman from another dimension. But he was murdered by Dr. Manhattan, and Dr. Manhattan imbued a part of himself into the chair. Now Wally West is merged with the chair and merged with Dr. Manhattan, and so he's a new person who is a Flash that sits on a chair and travels through the universe really fast. Because when I think of Flash, I think chair. And so
fast chair.
Fast, yeah. So that's the whole point. So now Wally Chair Fast Man is the one that's supposed to be setting continuity right, maybe? But who knows what continuity right means now, because some of these plans change. So one of the major changes was that Wonder Woman is the beginning of the Age of Heroes, not Superman.
Right.
And it's like...
And starting in World War One.
Starting in World War II.
Oh.
Yes. Right. Ignoring the movie, because whatever. So the thing about that, that's just kind of like, I mean, I almost get why you would want to do that. But like, we all know that the beginning of all superheroes in the industry is Superman. So it's like it's like trying to shove a square into a circular peg, you know, or something. It's just it just doesn't work. And that was supposed to be in the Free Comic Book Day book, a reprint of that story that shows Wonder Woman being the start of the Golden Age. That's been taken out now. So who knows what they're going to settle on for this relaunch.
So you're still talking about 5G?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I read that they were retconning it so that Wonder Woman made her emergence in World War I to jibe with the movie, and that was going to be the dawn of the Age of Heroes.
I'm pretty sure it was World War II, but either way, it's her at the start.
Which just makes no... Why? Why? You have all this lovely history. Why do you have to keep muddling with it? Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry. I think it's because these, you know, aside from a rare handful of talented storytellers, the rest of these folks don't know how to tell stories. And they don't care to. Mm-hmm. They're not really compelled to, which is what struck me about Dan Didio from the very, very beginning. It's like, I don't know what you're in this for, but you're trying to turn this whole thing into like the equivalent of a spectator sport. And also a poor man's art form, and now it's owned by a corporation. I saw lots of artists, you know, on Twitter praising him and his loss. I'm like, that's great. I'm glad to hear that he was actually good to artists and writers in the main. Unless he got into some ego conflict with them. But I also realize that that's a certain amount of ass kissing that's probably happening to a lot of artists who don't know where their next gig is going to come from now that he's gone.
There's a level of professionalism. You know, I always
There's
felt
that, too.
That Gail Simone and Geoff Johns towed the line super hard during the New 52 mm-hmm. because I felt that Gail Simone got screwed the most of the time. Just read her books and you'll be like, oh, this is terrible. It just felt like she was forced to change. She made Oracle one of the most important characters in the DC universe. Yes. And then they're like, we're going to cure Oracle and take away representation of disabled people. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that probably didn't feel great to Gail, but she played ball. She was polite and she worked the company. And the thing is, though, years later, I've read stuff about Gail basically being like, oh, that was such a bad time period for me. Mm-hmm. So it's like they were professional. And so people are still being professional. Not Rob Liefeld. But this made me feel really weird because he was the one person being specific, like, about time. I'm like, why am I agreeing with Rob Liefeld?
And it's terrible that we get put in that position.
But, yes. Look what you've done, Dan.
But what about, like, I mean, don't you have a story about you interacting with him at one point where you had serious retailer questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Scott and I, during one of the Emerald City Comic Cons, Didio had a panel here, or not a panel, a retail summit, and it was one of those things where it felt like it was supposed to be about talking to the retailers about how stuff is going, and instead it was literally them just like showing us the previews catalog. And it's like, if I wanted to do that, I'd pick up the catalog. And so
I remember having the shop anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing is, like, there were we were there, people from Xanadu Comics were there, all the local retailers that could, and there was definitely different mentalities happening. And I remember Casey from Xanadu stepping up and asking questions that were like, thank you, about like having kids' books and having stuff that wasn't, you know, like murdery and stuff like that. And Didio just basically, he looked down at us. He just didn't take us seriously. And they moved the whole conversation towards, look at these things we're showing you. And then some of the retailers are like, oh yeah, when are we going to get that $200 Joker mask with the blood? I'm like, ah. Some of these people are here about looking at the future of the industry, and some of these people are not. So it was just a very disheartening interaction with him. Mm-hmm. And I've heard at different conventions where he was just disrespectful to fans, because I'm sure he got tired of listening to people complain. Mm-hmm. The way around that is to not screw up so much. But you
know. Well, I never cared for the guy. I never cared for his editorial policies. I always got a bad vibe off him. And I went to, I guess the best way to describe it would be a DC rally one year at Emerald City Comic Con. And I literally felt like, you know, it's supposed to be like, here's what's coming. And I was like, you know, I've never gone to one of these things. This hall is packed with people, standing room only. And, I'm sorry, one of the most miserable times when I was in high school were at pep rallies. Mm. And that's what it felt like. Actually, no, it felt more like the rallies at Nuremberg. So I frickin' left. I'm like, I'm not going to participate in this. Mm-hmm. This is not, I just saw a lot of people I don't know what they were into, but they were screaming and yelling in joy for stuff that I couldn't relate to, and he was whipping them up.
It's preaching to the lowest common denominator.
And that's
look
why
at this
left.
Comic where the Joker rips his face off. Isn't it great?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is exciting. I bet that it seems to me there was someone who asked about War of the Gods. Because that, at that time, was one of the most disappointing and lackluster crossovers. It really, and I can't, and I think there are probably some integral reasons why it the bottom dropped out of it. But I just remember someone making a comment about it. What happened to it? Are we ever going to get it reprint? Or are we going to get, did they not conclude it? I guess I'm looking to you for help right now. It's like,
so wait, this, War of the Gods. Was this convention in 1990-something?
No, I didn't live here in 1990s, early 2000s.
Because War of the Gods, George Perez, Wonder Woman, War of the Gods.
Yeah. Somebody brought it up at this show.
That's weird.
It was. But he got ticked about it.
Oh, probably because he didn't want to talk about something that was published in 1991.
Well.
Or whatever, you know.
I think there's stuff that was left on. I think maybe
probably
that's what it
was. Probably
there was stuff that was left unconcluded.
But it's all of it at that point would have been not necessary for any continuity because they revamped twice since then.
Yeah,
that's true. Probably why he was like, I don't want to talk about this thing because it's not relevant.
Yeah.
All
right. Well. Sorry, I brought it up.
It
seemed to me that he was really rude to the fan who was asking the question. I'm like, okay, then why are we here?
All right. So DC's undergoing a crisis of infinite leadership now.
Totally.
The rumors are abound about what's happening.
We gave you a long time to come up with that one, didn't we?
No, I just came up with it now. I need to find a way to
what's
transition.
What's the opposite of infinite? Finite leadership.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
So, as I said before, one of the rumors that I've heard is that Warner Brothers is going to wind down DC. Hopefully that won't happen. The rumor is they might actually they'll do that and then license the characters to Marvel.
Yeah, those have been ideas that have been pitched around. That part of the rumor system came from somebody who's a troll. So that one's kind of like, but I can see them maybe being tempted about licensing out because Marvel already licenses out to IDW and Fantagraphics. Or Disney does to Fantagraphics. So it's just like, yeah, you know what? If you just become a thing where you want to just sell an IP and sell a license, there's more money in it to be made that way.
Right.
You know, look at Dark Horse. So.
Right. Because look how inconsistent their IPs are with all of their mainstream or all of their flagship characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm curious with you guys, like when someone comes in and asks about what's going on with Superman, what do you say to them?
Actually, I have a bit I can't always say. There's something happening with him right now that's relevant.
Yeah.
In that he revealed his identity to the world. So otherwise, I could
but
just tell.
You see my point here?
Yes,
it's like it depends on what book you pick up.
Yes.
There was that triple split focus time.
I actually can't recommend Superman, so that's the thing.
My point being that I just realized that so many of these books do not have a particular a core through line that you can identify like you used to. That's it's not cast in stone the way, or semi-stone, or, you know, way it used to be. These are the rules of these characters, and this is the world they live in.
Right.
And now all that's fluid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one of the problems, too, right now, is that some of the core characters, I have to tell people, like, well, you should probably start at the beginning of Tom King's run.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's about 3-4 years. Sorry. Never mind.
80+ issues back.
Yeah. So I was telling the customer who came into the store, he said he hasn't been into a store in over 10 years and he'd want to get into some stuff. What can I aim him towards? And I was having so much trouble because I was like, I can only go to the peripheral. I'm going to give you Dial H and I'm going to give you Mr. Miracle. Ooh, I should have given him Mr. Miracle. I can only give you these side things because I know that they're self-contained, they're solid, they're well done. And it's just like, what about Superman? I'm like, not right now. I could give you an old story, but I wouldn't make somebody suffer through trying to balance two different ongoing Bendis titles.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome to try it, but I just could recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, like exactly. It's difficult. Yeah.
So if you were to sell an IP to other corporations, this would be a good time to do it because everything's so about these flagship characters is so inconsistent.
Yeah,
I'm seeing conspiracy people. I am seeing conspiracies everywhere I look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As retailers, are you guys nervous about direction DC is taking right now?
Yeah, because the trick is, again, I wish it wasn't the case, but Marvel and DC are the pillars of constant sales.
Yeah.
And if you knock down a pillar, half that temple's gone, and you can't live in a half temple. I lose my metaphors. but yeah, it's just like if for whatever reason something catastrophic happened and DC was just like, we're not going to publish for 3 months before we figure this out, then it's just like, there goes all my Batman readers, my Justice League mm-hmm. readers, my Legion readers, my yeah. Nightwing readers. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that goes like a fair part of my pie chart, you know? And that's not good.
That,
you know?
I feel like that could probably...
That's a killer.
That could probably kill Corner. I mean, we're... As much as I've diversified the stock there, it's still very much a core superhero store. So mm-hmm. not having DC, having... I mean, I have a diehard DC guy who gets like one of everything, yeah. you know? I mean, he would have... Nothing. You
and
know?
New comics are the blood flow of a store.
Yeah. Right,
you know, we right. can
yeah.
stock as many all ages stuff that we mm-hmm. sell to educators, as many good graphic novels, but I need that flow that will bring in approximately 70 people on Wednesday. You know, these numbers I could count on. Mm-hmm. And once you take away a chunk, you're just bleeding out, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Any final words on the firing or asterisks of Dan Didio? Or should we move on?
I'm just curious to see if somebody's like, we should probably bring Jeff back. know, we exiled him. We should probably open that door, you know?
Yeah.
Let's reunite right. Scott Snyder and Jeff, the friends.
the friends. yeah.
All right, let's move on to book report, everybody. And why Cole Hornaday? Let's start with you.
Sure. Well, I picked up yet another Vault comic that really, really freaking excites me. And I think we're up to three now that really excite me. We've got these...
Savage Shores.
Bloody Shores, yes. Mm-hmm. and my brain is dead. Fearscape. And now The Plot. And The Plot is a really interesting horror series. And there's nothing really new happening in The Plot. It's the cool thing about it is it's set in 1974. And I think that we're going to be looking at arcs that go in different decades because it's about a family. It's about a cursed family in where? Maine.
no.
And we meet a couple who are like the latest or the boomer generation of this family of from a farm that run a pharmaceutical firm. They're very wealthy, and it starts out at and what is his name? Oh, Charles Motto and his wife are at a presentation or an anniversary gala for their pharmaceutical company, and Charles says, you know, my great-great-grandfather started this company, and he was a very, very sick man. And then my grandfather was a sick man, and so was my father. So we're getting this kind of, you know, weird, creepy lineage happening. They talk about family, and then they're home after the party, and this giant, muck-looking monster breaks in, kills the wife, kills the son, but not before the son recognizes that this is his father. Mm. So there's this wonderful Lovecraftian stuff happening there, which is very, very satisfying to me. There's some body horror stuff happening. And then what happens is this couple's surviving children wound up becoming wards of their drunken uncle, and they go back to the hometown of Cape Augusta, Maine, where they move into the ancient family mansion that's, you know, a basement full of slime and creepy sounds and creepy visions on the parts of characters. And no, there's nothing original happening in it. We've seen all these horror tropes before, but it's done really, really well.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very happy with the book. And maybe it would be a better read in a collection, which Vault books I'm sure are. But I've been enjoying picking it up on a monthly basis. Let me go back. It's written by Tim Daniel and Michael Marici, and it's drawn by Joshua Hickson. And I really like Hickson's artwork a lot. It reminds me of a lot of other artists, horror artists from the 90s and early 2000s, the names of whom escape me right now. But there's some wonderful mood scenes happening. I think all the characters are really compelling, so I'm going to keep reading it. And I have a hunch I'm not going to be disappointed by this book because Vault just seems to have a leg up on a lot of the type of stories they're telling, and they're setting themselves apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that first issue. I did a.
I like the title too.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Title the design. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The fonts and everything. I'm sorry,
I think they got the tone right, like yeah. How you were saying, like with the art, but also just like the atmospheric feel, mm-hmm. like just with the washes over it. It gives you that kind of horror movie feel.
I also like the fact that it's set in the early 70s. Mm. And one of the reasons why I think that's important when you're telling a story is the absence of technology that we have now. Mm. Because a lot of time you're going, like, there's a part where this little boy's lost in the woods, and like any kid today would have a cell phone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, but you forget that life was a little bit more complicated without technology. And it feels less safe when you don't have the technology we have now. And to remove those things as part of the atmosphere in the story kind of adds a creep factor that already in our storytelling to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
cool. All right. The plot. Thank you, Cole.
Yeah.
Chris Casso, what do you got for us?
I'll also do a vault book.
Excellent.
And, so this came out this week and, it is Finger Guns by Justin Richards and Val Halverson. And, I'm going to need to read like a couple more issues because I don't know if it's that it read too quick for me or if part of the concept just didn't hit me right. But basically, you're following a young boy who is listless and like his father's never home and he's depressed. And he starts playing around and makes like finger gun motions at people. But then he notices that when he shoots him, they get angry. Like he creates a Hulk, basically. Mm-hmm. Like somebody just goes insane and yells at their kid, and somebody just throws trash around, and this dog goes mad and bites somebody. And then there's a girl that he bumped into earlier, and she has the opposite effect with the gun, and it calms somebody down and they're chill. And so, and they want to experiment. It's like, is it like how you cock your fingers? Is it if you use one finger or two? And, you know, what does it do to you exactly? So it's just the early part of that. And then it also kind of ended sort of abrupt for me. So I think it's just one of those books that will probably read stronger as a collected. Mm-hmm. But overall, like very well put together and good handle on the characterization. Halverson's got great facial expressions. It's a little bit more cartoony than I'm used to in some of the Vault books. Uh-huh. There's like a scale, and like one of the other Vault books I loved is The Necromancer's Map. Hmm. And that has like a slight cartoony element to it, but this would be cartoonier, and then, you know, plot would be on the more realism scale. Sure. Along with Savage Shores and Black Stars Above. So yeah, it's worth a check. I get the feeling I'm just going to care about the trade.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, not bad. First issue.
Cool. Finger Guns. Thanks, Chris. And finally, Nicole, what do you want to tell us about?
I read Strange Adventures, right? Isn't that what it's called?
Yes.
Okay. I'm looking at an advanced PDF that it has no cover.
And it's got like jigsaw puzzles on it.
Yeah,
so if we ever leak it, we'll get in trouble.
That's right. Don't talk about this book. It's by Tom King. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a new writer on the scene. And of course, his best friend, Mitch Gerards, and his new best friend, Evan Doc Shaner, are on the art. And, you know, it's exactly what you would expect of a Tom King. If you don't know about Tom King, he loves the 9-panel pages. He loves deconstruction.
He loves to make you depressed.
He loves to make you very sad. He usually has these really deep thematic themes. He has these themes that usually revolve around something like, you know, Mr. Miracle was like depression and PTSD type stuff. And like vision, like what it is to be human or what it is to be the best, I guess. I don't know what, something along that
family.
Line. Family.
Well, both those books are all about family too. Dysfunctional.
Families. Absolutely. There's always like some sort of, there's some sort of spouse. I'm really great at this, guys. This follows Adam Strange, which if you don't know who Adam Strange is, they eventually tell you who Adam Strange is. He can, what does he can do? He can like create a beam that gets
Zeta
him
beam.
To.
The beam just randomly takes him from
takes
planet.
Takes him, to this planet Rand, and stuff's going down. By the way, you guys might know, how do you say the name of the villains? It sounds like pickets or something to me, but I don't
remember.
Know.
How you I read this too, and I can't remember.
Anyway, so you know, he's just like a pulp hero who goes and saves this world, gets the woman.
He's
and,
a Flash Gordon.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And he comes back to Earth. He has a family, his wife and his little daughter, and he's written a book about what has happened in Ran, and is at a book signing. So you're getting the book signing while you're also getting flashbacks of like what he had been doing in Ran. And as he's meeting people, people are like, oh, this is so amazing. But then you get this one guy who's like, I know what you did. You did something terrible. And he gets called out on it. The media goes wild on it. And he asks a superhero in the DC universe to help him out. And now it's like, what's going to unfold? Did he actually do the thing? Did he not do the thing? Mm. And of course there's all a lot of, emotional subtext in every panel dripping with it. So and
the book flips between the two artists depending on which time period he's in.
I didn't really notice that in this, but I think it's also because I'm like dealing with trying to just read it through these line jigsaws.
Yeah.
Which I'm not
used
to. Yeah,
it distracts quite a
bit. The watermarks.
Yeah,
are
the watermarks. Yeah, so it's like, it's coming out soon. I don't remember if it's coming out the week that this comes out or the week after. Is it the 4th?
It's next week. Now,
yeah,
and last week when you hear this, maybe so.
Who knows?
Gonna be another 12-parter.
Yeah.
So yes.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Chainer gets the flashbacks because that's the stuff that's supposed to look like a Silver Age.
Oh,
and then
I see.
The Which other guy sense. Gets the modern stuff that's supposed to make it look dirty.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay.
Because Chainer is the best human to ever draw anything that looks like the Silver Age or anything that looks vaguely happy.
He's kind of got that Darwin Cook feel.
Yes.
Like, not with without being that exact style, but that kind of lighthearted feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Gerard's just makes you feel sad.
Yeah,
sad. I think I want to read this book.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Obviously.
Yeah. If you like Tom King, you're going to love this because it's more Tom King.
He makes me mad when he sucks.
Yes.
But otherwise, you know.
This is more of a passion project versus the obligation project.
Okay.
Batman's are obligations.
Punch him over his obligation project for crying out loud.
Omega Man is the only thing that throws a wrench in that for me because in no way was that an obligation. Although that was like his first major job, so maybe that is the obligation.
No, Heroes in Crisis.
Well, I'm just talking about Heroes in Crisis is an obligation.
Yeah.
Yes.
But
yes.
Obscure characters are passion.
Yeah.
Omega Men are
not listening to you. Yeah. I'm terribly sorry.
No, that's okay. Omega Men are definitely not generally an obligation because nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I would assume that's a passion. But if it's your first major job at the company, then it's an obligation.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting book. It'll be interesting to read. At this point, I read Mr. Miracle in a trade paperback, and I read Vision same way. So I'm kind of partial to reading Tom King in a trade.
Sure,
yeah.
Because there's just so much going on, and I feel like waiting month to month is hard.
Yeah.
But, it anyway. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Strange Adventures. Thank you, Nicole. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show coming up as quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by the Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at the Perfect Bound podcast. No, thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsengine.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your comics or your podcast. I'm doing 100% right now.
Yeah, we're all 100% today.
PerfectBoundPodcast.com. Send us an email, PerfectBoundPodcast@gmail.com, and our friends get your quiz heads on. It's quiz time this week. The questions come to us from me.
Ooh.
We talked in this episode about the firing of Dan Didio. Well, here are other real-life firings that come up when you do a quick Google search for comic book characters that were fired.
Oh,
well, I wanted to find comic book characters that were fired, but everybody's like, hey, look, Dan Didio was let go. Anyway, number one. In 2009, Dwayne McDuffie was fired from what title? Not because of the quality of his work or the level of sales, but due to his revelations of behind-the-scenes discussions on DC's message boards.
At some point in history, I knew this.
What was he on in 2009? I'll give it to
you. Justice League.
Justice League of America.
Just under the wire.
All right. In late 2012, this writer was fired from the Batgirl title, a title she shepherded through the New 52, and after intense fan backlash, was rehired almost 2 weeks later.
Gail Simone.
Gail Simone, number three. It's hard to find an instance during a quick Google search where a dude was fired for something other than sexual harassment, but in 2017, this artist was fired for putting anti-Semitic and anti-Christian messages in the background of X-Men Gold number one. Yeah, what's his name?
I don't remember his name.
You're close.
He was, wasn't Filipino. He was, where was he?
Malaysian?
Malaysia.
Yeah, Malaysia.
I cannot remember his name.
Mahmoud?
Yeah.
No. His name, I'll give it to you. His name is Ardian Syaf.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't even close. Yeah. I was thinking of another artist.
The thing that was really sad about that is that I had never heard of the guy before. And we'll never hear of him again.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was really unfortunate.
He even said on Twitter after that whole thing came out, my career is over. Yeah. In 2016, she was fired from Vertigo under the guise of restructuring, wherein DC stated that the vice president and executive editor position was no longer needed.
Karen Berger.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Cough. No.
Shelley Bond.
Oh, Shelley Bond.
It was one of those two women.
And finally, I dare you to Google comic book writer fired and find a story not connected to this man getting fired from Star Wars Shadow of Vader in 2018 over tweets that Marvel deemed too political, too vulgar, and too negative.
Right. The thing is, I've never read a thing of him ever, so I don't know who he is.
Oh, I can't remember.
I just saw everybody got into a huff about it.
I don't remember his name either.
Yeah.
The SEO on news stories about Chuck Wendig's firing is out of control. All right. Well, that is quiz time.
I got the Chuck part in my head. Yeah.
Okay. And that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.